Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
1890 453 106 is our low call number. Our text number is 53106. That'll cost you 30 cents. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter or send us an email to afternoon@newstalk.com. I'm coming to you today from the Red Cow Mourne Hotel with thanks to our friends in Lidl. You've just been listening to Cry Monster Cry. That's their forthcoming single, High. That's coming out on April the 20th, 12th. If you'd like to see them at the Unitarian show in Dublin, you can't because that's sold out, but you can see them at the Fantastival Festival. That runs from May 31st to June the 2nd, and the Doonan Folk Festival from June the 14th to the 16th. So thanks a million, lads. We will be getting one more song for them later on. We're joined up on the big stage by Esther McCarthy and Jean Smullen. Good afternoon to you both.
Hello, how are you?
And hello to our lovely audience as well, who have come to the
radio. Hello.
Is it lashing rain outside? No, good. Thank God for that. Right. Okay, so, three movers we're doing today and three separate wines. So what wines are we going to be talking about
today? It's all about France at the moment. Okay. Lidl actually have a French wine experience going on at the moment. They've got about 36 wines from about 12 different French wine regions. And they literally went on sale on the 25th of March, and it's while stocks last. When they're gone, they're gone. But there's some super wines. And we're going to be looking at Alsace, which is a part of France which has you know,
not always been a part of France.
Not always been a part of France, yeah. And then we're going to Bordeaux, a white Bordeaux rather than a red Bordeaux, from the region of Graves, which is a very, very good part. It's to the south of the city of Bordeaux. And then one of my favourite from the southern Rhone, an appellation called Gigondas, which is a blended wine made mainly from Grenache, Mourvèdre and Syrah, which is absolutely lovely. And that'll be great to finish off the show with this afternoon.
So my page with the prizes on it, what does that smell of? Jean spilled a little bit of wine just before we came.
Right into Sean's lap.
My groin smells like a brewery now. Not for the first time. We do have prizes actually to give away now. For listeners at home, what we're giving away is an overnight stay here at the Red Cow Morn with full Irish breakfast, three-course table d'hote dinner in Tom's Table at the Red here in the hotel. For the audience here, we're going to give away a three-course dinner for four people at Tom's Table, which is where you are right now. It'll be based on who sends in the best texts. So you can text into us and we can read it out, even though you could just walk up and say to me, but that would be that would be weird. We do have a hashtag as well. This is based on an item we did earlier on in the week in our adult slot, where a woman had moved in with a new boyfriend and she was too embarrassed to poo in the toilet. And so she wasn't doing it anywhere else, obviously, but she was saving it up until she went to work and possibly doing herself damage. So the hashtag is embarrassing movies. There's lots of them already. Flies Wide Open, for instance. Can you say hello to Bree and Denny, who are in the audience today? Wish I was there too, says Mary, who's listening at home in her sickbed. Where are Bree and Denny? There they are. Poor Mary. Yeah, yeah, she doesn't. Yeah, to be honest with you, they don't look that sorry for you, Mary. I'm heading to see Crime Monster Cry in the Unitarian tonight, says Dervla. That performance has to be so exciting. Those voices do things to me. Ooh, I don't know what things they are. You know, I pass a Red Cow every day onto work, but I've never called in. If they do a good roast carvery, then I'm there. Can you confirm that? Well, we didn't have a carvery, but Declan, I'm sure that they do an excellent one. Esther joins us as well. So two comedies or three comedies?
We've a nice mix this week. We've a superhero movie, we have a Western, and we have a true story that's so true, so mad, that I just kept Googling it afterwards going, that can't have happened, which is a film called The Keeper, which is the story of a guy by the name of Bart Trautmann, who was he fought on the front line for Germany during World War II and ended up making a home for himself in England and playing in goal for Manchester City in the 1950s. And it's just like, no, that can't have actually happened. But he was brought to England as a prisoner of war and was in a camp in Lancashire. And they found out that he was a rather good goalkeeper. So the local town manager got him to go and goal for the team, and he ended up getting all the way to Manchester City, playing in goal for like 250 games. And it's just a lovely, and you know, it's a UK-German co-production, and it's just lovely that this film got made and the story told. But it's also...
Wouldn't get made in a couple of months' time.
Well, I would suggest a certain parliament sit down and watch it, that's for sure. But yeah, it's the nice thing about it as well is it doesn't make it all free and easy and glowy. Like, there was a lot of debate and protests around him playing, especially when it was discovered that he signed up to fight in the German army, that he wasn't conscripted like he had told people when he came here first. So it's nice and complicated, this one, you know?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's really good. Then we have the Sisters Brothers. Joaquin Phoenix and Jake Gyllenhaal have confused me all my life. They're just these two people that I always mix up. Even though I love both their films and they're very different actors in a lot of ways, but now they're in the same film talking to each other, so I am just going to be confused for the rest of my life. But they're in this great Western with John C. Reilly, directed by Jacques Audiard. He's a very well-known French filmmaker. He made a couple of great movies, a couple of breakout films really that got seen everywhere. If you're familiar with A Prophet, that great prison drama from about 10 years ago. And then he made a film with Marion Cotillard called Rust and Bone, which was really good as well. He's into his images. He is French, ultimately. He's into his images. Yeah. But he likes to mix it up a bit and kind of brings a grittiness and a steeliness into his films. So I think he was always ripe to come to the States and make an English language film, and I thought a Western was a really, really interesting choice.
And are they two brothers who were called Sister?
Yes, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's bound to start a few scraps,
I would
have thought.
It's based on, I think, a really much-loved novel, which I haven't read, but I think it was very popular when it was released.
Right. And yeah. Shazam! I'm
Shazam.
Saying that because it has an exclamation mark
you
at the end of it.
You just come back after every ad break saying Shazam. This is great. It's good fun. It is... I suppose it's about a 14-year-old boy who gets turned into a superhero, a full grown-up like man in his 30s with like lots of bionic powers and stuff. So I'm going with Big in spandex is what I would say. And there's a lovely nod actually to Big in one of the scenes in the film. And it's great fun. And Zachary Levi, an actor I'm not very familiar with, who's off the telly, I think, but he is absolutely brilliant in the lead role, combining this sense of superhero awesome adultness with... the 14-year-old inside him going, I can't believe I can kill baddies. And it's just such good fun.
Is this a DC or a Marvel job?
It's DC, and it is, they will be relieved. It has been very widely well-reviewed, and it's about time because the whole DC thing hasn't been, I suppose, as smooth and successful as the Marvel comics, you know, coming to the big screen.
Yeah.
We had Batman versus Superman was just, man, it was dark and it was boring. Yeah. Wonder Woman was better, but this, for me, is the best of the lot so far.
Okay, that probably doesn't say much.
No, but I'm excited to see more.
Better than the other crap is on the movie
exactly.
poster.
Exactly. They're not going to put that in the poster, are they?
My wife finished her first week of work after losing her job 4 years ago. This has been a big week for us. I want to get a nice bottle of wine to celebrate with her tonight, but nothing sparkling as she's not a fan, says Cahill, who's a very proud husband in Bandon.
In Bandon, right. Well, down Corkway, you could go to O'Donovan's. They've got 10 shops around that area, and I think they might have a shop in Bandon. Well, it depends on what she likes. You see, I'm not a mind reader. I don't know what style. Yeah. Does she prefer red? Does she prefer white? But look, what I'd say is go spend a bit of money because you're going to get... you know, value, you're going to get more for your buck if you spend over €15. If you want to buy something really good, I've become a really good fan of New Zealand Chardonnay. And actually yesterday I was at a tasting and I tasted one of the most beautiful New Zealand Chardonnays, the Hunter's Chardonnay, which is available independent off licenses. And I'd just forgotten how absolutely elegant, because the New Zealand Chardonnays tend not to be kind of very heavily oaked, and the soil gives it that lovely kind of minerality, but there's a lovely sort of soft, you know, tropical fruit character coming through. And it's been a while since I tried. Now this is in the region of about €25 a bottle, but and funny enough, the Hunters has an Irish connection. The man who started the wine originally came from Belfast, so it was actually lovely, and I'd forgotten. So just because I tasted one yesterday, I'd say
okay.
Try a New Zealand Chardonnay, but you'd be prepared to pay a little bit extra for it.
This is one of these kind of wine / medical questions, the ones you really love.
Oh, I love them so much.
Over the years, the more weight I put on, the less I can drink. I can barely have a glass now, red or white. I think I heard it was something to do with fat not metabolizing alcohol. I'm 50 and puddiny. Is it true, Anna-Marie?
I have no idea. I'm 50, nearly 60 in puddiny, so I have no idea.
And have you found difficulty drinking wine?
And what I studied was wine, not medicine. So unfortunately, my as I always say, go ask your doctor.
Susan is having friends over for a light lunch, mainly salads, a cheese board, cold cuts. I'm looking for a light, refreshing wine to accompany, please.
Oh, well, the Alsace Riesling we're going to have would be absolutely perfect. It was made to go with salads. It's the... Jean Cornelius Alsace Riesling. It's $9.99 and it's in Lidl at the moment as part of their French wine sale. It's lovely, and actually I just took a little sip of it there, and it's got lovely kind of soft tropical fruit coming through and a little bit of acidity. And if you're having any sort of salad, particularly a green salad with maybe a little bit of zest in there or some kind of a French dressing, it'll go very well with that.
Yeah, and is this the first wine we're going to be doing?
This is the first wine we're going to be doing. Yeah.
And because it's from Alsace, is it... are there elements, if you like, of German wine there as well?
The Germanic tribes first settled in the region in like the first century. And then it was actually the Romans who brought winemaking to Alsace. Alsace is a beautiful region. I've been lucky to be there, a visit there a couple of times. This is where you have these beautiful picturesque houses that look like something out of a Hansel and Gretel fairy tale. They're all these wooden medieval houses, particularly in some of the little towns. The Vosges Mountains make this region one of the driest regions in France, because basically the Atlantic weather fronts come across and they hit the west side of the mountains, and the lee of the mountains, the other side, is very, very dry. So they don't get a huge amount of rainfall here. It's also, you know, granite soil, and this is a predominantly white wine region. And the best known white grapes from this region would be Riesling, Gewürztraminer, and of course, it's the home of Pinot Gris, which is what the Italians call Pinot Grigio. So we're actually looking at an Alsatian Riesling today. And Riesling is a German grape. Now, Alsace is up at the 45th parallel. The most farthest north that you can really commercially grow the vine is at latitude 50 degrees, and this is about 45 to 49 degrees. And it's northern Europe, so it doesn't get a huge amount of sunshine, so you're not going to get big, ripe, fruity wines. What you're going to get is it's cold in winter, it's continental climate, it's warm in summer. So the Riesling grape, which is a German grape, which is one of the great white grapes of the world, grows particularly well here, and it's native to this region. And the other thing about Alsace that's quite interesting, it's the only French region where they're legally allowed to put the name of the grape variety on the bottle, and that's always been the case, ever since the Appellation laws were first put together, in the middle of the last century. The other thing you'll notice, and I'm not going to risk pulling the bottle out of the in case I spill it over Sean again, but it's a long, thin bottle, which is a similar bottle style to the bottle style that you'll find in Germany. So, I mean, right up until the Second World War, Alsace has kind of moved between being part of France and being part of Germany. And the winemaking techniques that you find in Alsace are very similar to those that you find in Germany, except they don't gauge the wines based on the level of sweetness or the level of ripeness. It's the French appellation laws, which mean the vineyard site is what defines the quality in the area. Now, Riesling, Alsace Riesling at $9.99 is great value. The alcohol by volume is only 12% in this as well, which makes it very, you know, if you're having your lunch and you're having your salad and you don't want to blow your head away, that's going to be quite nice. Honey lemon is the sort of characteristic you'd expect to get from the Riesling grape. There isn't a huge amount of acidity coming through in this one. There's much more sort of soft tropical fruits coming through. The honeyed, you're getting a slight touch of honey coming through as well. And again, with any sort of light salad, this is a beautiful, easy drinking wine style. Riesling is not a very mainstream grape. People either love it or hate it. Personally, I love Riesling. It's a grape variety I'm very, very fond of. But at $8.99, this Jean Cornelius Alsatian Riesling 2017, very, very lovely wine. Did you like it out there? Yeah. Good. Yes. Well, that's what it's all about.
Someone says, I want a bottle opener at work. It's one of those nerdy ones that you pierce through the cork and pump air into the bottles.
Oh, that's a Coravin.
Oh.
That's expensive. Whoa.
Well, she says, I'm actually afraid to use it. Would the bottle explode if I pump air into it? I'm generally a screw cap kind of girl.
It's not a needle, you see.
No, it's not one of those.
It's not
no.
The Coravin. Yeah. Okay. It's a vacuum.
Yeah, thingy. Yeah.
Oh, just buy your waiter's friend. Give it. Do what my mother used to do. Yeah, re-gift.
Re-gift. Give it to somebody.
And mother used to forget who she'd give what present to. So
that's always there. Yeah, that's always there.
At Christmas, you know? So yeah, no, re-gift it to somebody else and buy yourself a waiter's friend. That's the best opener you could possibly have, I think.
Niall, who's here in the audience with us today and a bit of a clever clogs, says, why are the Alsace Riesling wines so much drier than the sweet German Rieslings?
Because the Germans prefer the sweeter style. So they leave their grapes until they're ripe, because it's all about the sweetness levels, because the German wine laws, the quality is based on the level of sweetness in the wine, or the level of sugar in the wine. So they vinify their wine slightly sweeter, whereas in Alsace, they vinify the wines bone dry.
That's why. Okay, we're going to take a break. We have a bit more music and another movie after this. Five 3106 is our text number that will cost you 30 cents. We're coming to you today from the Red Cow Moran Hotel with thanks to our friends at Lidl. We do have a hashtag. It is embarrassing movies. Wet Patch Adams, for instance. Jean and Esther are with us. A Frenchman directing a Western. Are all the cowboys sitting around the campfire smoking Galois and reading Sartre? Of the shooting in this movie.
There's always that assumption about French cinema. If you actually go to the pictures in France, like, the French cinema in France is like full of the most broad comedies, slapstick movies, people falling over, romances and stuff. I think there was just a period maybe in the 80s and 90s that a lot of French cinema that filtered through here was kind of the, you know, like the Three Colors trilogy, and where there were
the
close-ups
of
lampshades and things like that. And it was all very metaphor filled. But actually French cinema is really, really commercial in general.
How many movies did John C. Reilly make this year? He's never out of the cinema. Wreck-It Ralph, This Brother-Sister One, The Terrible One with Will Ferrell, set in Victorian times, Stan and Ollie, all very different movies. I'm worried about John C. Reilly fatigue, says another text.
Yeah, he's been in... This is the fourth film since... November. Fourth film since November, so it has been like... But you probably find that they were made over a two-year period or something, and it's kind of like John C. Reilly buses, they all arrived at the same time.
Yeah. Joan says, The Sisters Brothers is one of the best books I've read. It's by Patrick Jewett. So much so, I don't want to ruin it by watching the movie. And Jackie says, an up-and-coming Irish actor, Aidan O'Hare, appears in Sisters Brothers as well.
He has a small support role in it, yeah.
Somebody wants to know, any idea when the Elton John bio is out?
No, I think, well, the trailers have dropped already, so I think you're definitely looking at probably late summer this year. I don't have an exact release date, but we can check that. I think there's a huge appetite for it on the back of Bohemian Rhapsody, which, you know, is our most recent Marmite movie that really split audiences. But I think it just shows that there's an appetite out there for kind of a rock musical and for that kind of genre.
So it's somebody's acting as Elton John in
it. What's his name? Oh, his name's escaped me. Yes, it is. It's a biopic.
I look forward to reading all the text saying it's blah blah. Call yourself a movie reviewer. Somebody else says, I watched the trailer for the new Joker movie. It looks dark. Has Esther seen it yet? I'm afraid to say it might be better than the Heath Ledger one.
I thought it looked fantastic. I avoid trailers as a rule. As you know, I try and go in and get surprised by my movies. But I couldn't resist having a look because the traffic for it yesterday was just massive. Everyone wanted to see it. And it was really bringing a new dimension to the comic book thing. I think if Christopher Nolan made the Batman movies a bit dark and gritty, this certainly does something new with it as well.
Okay, well, it'll be interesting to see. Right, well, let's talk about our first movie of the day. It is Shazam. Here's a clip.
Freddy,
what happened to the stairs?
Hey, covering her mouth if you're gonna kidnap her is not gonna make her less scared, okay?
Darla, it's me, it's Billy. I know I don't look like me. A wizard made me look like
this. Maybe don't start with the wizard, it's just gonna make her more confused.
Some old guy brought me to a temple and he made me say Shazam.
Rosa!
Verbally triggered body manipulation properties? You can switch by saying Shazam!
Okay then. That's pretty much the whole plot explained.
That's proper plot lining there. Yeah. Some old guy brought me to a temple and he made me say Shazam. None of this complicated Marvel nonsense where we have to know all the backstories and characters. Yeah, and it's quite simple. It's aimed at a younger audience. I liked it for that. It has a great, great young cast led by Asher Angel, who plays the teenager Billy Batson, who actually has a nice kind of little bit of heart going on to this as well, because he kind of doesn't fit in. He's been moving from foster home to foster home ever since he became separated from his birth mother at a fairground as a boy, and he's baffled as to why she never came looking for him. So he's trying to manage all that, not fitting in well in foster homes, but he is only 14, so he has to stick it out. And he's moved to a new group home where there's lots of other orphans and misfits and kind of people who are just kind of forced to live under the same roof by circumstance. A very nice foster couple looking after them. But he forges a friendship with this boy named Freddie, who we hear on the clip there, who's played by Jack Grazer, another great young performance. He's obsessed with superheroes, so he knows all about superpowers and stuff like that, which becomes great fun because... when Billy is transformed, he's pulled into this kind of mysterious lair by a character known as, they're keeping it simple, he's called the Wizard. And he's Jimon Hounsou is playing him. And he believes that he's the chosen one and he wants to pass the staff quite literally, and he, in doing so, when Billy says Shazam, he is transformed into a superhero. And the two young teenage boys have great fun with seeing whether he can fly. That doesn't end very well for him a couple of times. Velocity, ability to, you know, laser eye and all that kind of stuff. They have great fun with that and trying and road testing what works and what doesn't. And I suppose for a good superhero movie, you need a good baddie. And in steps Mark Strong, who's reliably good in everything he does. And he's playing Dr. Savannah, who has... He's a nasty piece of work and he's got a lot of powers himself. He has daddy issues, of course. And he is kind of furious that he wasn't selected by the wizard and won't kind of rest until he gets a hold of these powers. So Billy has become very attached to all of these other kids who live in the house and they come under threat, I suppose. And he has to make some very, very difficult decisions. But it's just so much fun. As I said, big in spandex, because it's just this grown character, brilliantly played by Zachary Levi, who manages to convey that kind of wide-eyed, you know, wonder of the 14-year-old who suddenly finds he has all these powers but doesn't really know what to do with them. So that's very, very sweet. Ultimately, it comes a little bit unstuck, because guess what, Sean? It's too bloody long.
Yeah.
2 hours and 10 minutes. I'm going to try and not rant about this for the summer now, but like... mainstream blockbusters just need to trim it back a bit and don't give us the big bloated finale where we have 5 endings. You know, I'm hearing rumours that the new Avengers movie is going to be over 3 hours long. And it's just getting to kind of crazy levels. I think it's the idea behind it, I suppose, is giving people a sense of value for money.
Yeah.
But for me, if you can't tell, I mean, I'm not going to set a time on it actually, but I've just, in several films I've seen lately, it's all felt a bit bloated in the second hour. And that's across genres. So you could argue it for the Sisters Brothers as well, which we're going to talk about later. And I just think, let the editor do their job, you know, just trim it all back a bit and leave us wanting more. Mm. And it just, this film gets, I feels a bit greedy towards the end, but for the first hour 40, it's a whole lot of fun. It's very slapstick, really geared towards teenage audiences, but I think kids will love it as well, because there is, as I say, a lot of falling over as he tries to get his powers right.
Is there going to be a Shazam 2 and 3 and 7?
I hope so. I would see plenty to like here. I think Zachary Levi, it's a wonderful performance from him in a kind of where did this guy come from kind of way. And DC Comics need a hit. Warner needs a hit with this, because Wonder Woman did very well for them, and I thought it was really well made, actually. But like the other superhero movies with the male characters haven't been really very good at all, you know. Now, they've made money, but they haven't been great.
And his name is Billy Batts. Is that right?
Billy Batson.
Yeah. Ah, Batson. Yeah. Someone says, you're telling me there's a character called Billy Batts in this movie. Is he any relation to Billy Batts, who came to an unfortunate end at the hands of Joe Pesci and his mother's kitchen knife in Goodfellas?
I don't think he's any relation.
Interesting movie reference there. Mark Strong is in this. Oh, Mark, why? He's attaching himself to such silly movies. Remember the terrible movie, The Grimsby Brothers with Sacha Baron Cohen? Awful tripe.
Silly, but in the best possible way. It's very witty. And it is, you know, it's quite slapstick, but I really enjoyed this. I think kids are going to love it. I think it's going to do really well at the box office.
Carla wants to know, how high in alcohol can wine reach? And when does it stop being wine and start being turpentine?
Under EU laws, wine is, by definition, is between ABV 8% and 15%. And once wine goes over 15% alcohol by volume, it's no longer wine. It's then usually fortified. And that's where you have your sherries and your ports, because they're usually 15 to 18 degrees ABV. And once it goes over 15 degrees, the revenue commissioners step in and they lob a higher tax on it. So the wineries make, and actually when the wines come into Ireland, there's a lot of testing, you know, and they do watch them. They make sure that they are not gone over the 15%, because once they do, they pay higher tax. So it's in the interest of the winery to make sure they're not over that limit. So yeah, wine by its definition, the highest it can go is 15% alcohol by volume.
I think this came up before. Is it a cardinal sin to add a lemon slice to wine? Or maybe the odd orange slice.
Well, they do. That's what sangria is, basically, with a bit of, lemon juice and orange juice and wine. You know, it's usually kind of jug wine that you get from, you know, around the Costa Blanca and Costa del Sol. But if that's what you like, when did I become the wine police? You know, do whatever you want. If you like it, then it's fine, you know?
And lots of people have texted in, Esther, demanding your immediate resignation and telling us that Taron Egerton plays Elton John in the forthcoming biopic. And Tony, who's in the audience, also sent in a request. He said, I'm in the audience. I'd like to apply for the position of intern to you, Gene, if such a...
So I don't spill the wine.
An assistant wine taster, should such a producer... Here's the thing, though. You really should check your text before you press send, especially the autocorrect, because he calls you Gene Swollen in his text. So. I think you blew it there, Tony.
No, it's okay. In Dutch, Smullen is my surname, and it's actually an Irish surname. It was a Tipperary sept, and it goes back a long way. But the word Smullen in Dutch means gluttonous. So when I go to these international wine competitions, and any of you who's sitting here looking at me can see I like my food, right? I get all these Dutch people, and I say, hello, I'm Gene Smullen, and they go, ah! Kind of over that joke at this stage. Yeah.
Okay, so
autocorrect, that's in the Hapney place. Right now, yeah.
Well, we'll take a break. We get a chance to laugh at Gene's surname after this.
Yeah. All right, everybody. It's time for some blues and some rock and roll. How y'all feeling out there? Let me hear you say yeah. Yeah, all right. I'm a man who knows what he wants. Fast cars and a fat bank account. All these things I already have. I'm what you need, baby, you can tell, baby. I'm what you need, baby. Don't ever leave me, baby. I know what you want, I know what you need. I'll be your man, cause I aim to please. I'll bring you roses, make your breakfast in bed. I'll kiss your toes all the way to your head, baby. I'm what you need, baby. Don't ever leave me, baby. Hug me, baby. Squeeze me tight. Make my life. Make your dream forever come true. Happiness, me and you.
Carvin Jones there with I'm What You Need, the Carvin Jones Trio. There's going to be like three of them doing this tonight in Arthur's Pub in Dublin at 9:30 p.m. Please do catch that if you can. And they're on an extensive tour around Europe, Canada and the States for the rest of the year. This man loves to tour. We'll be hearing from him towards the end of the show. Thanks, Carvin, for that. Someone's texting in to say, holy moly, tell your man he can bring me breakfast in bed anytime. That fella playing there has the bang of Rory Gallagher off him with a bit of Hendrix thrown in.
Yes.
I suppose he wouldn't take that as an insult at all. I'm driving to France and Germany via the ferry and the Channel Tunnel next week with the wife, and we're thinking of stockpiling on a few nice wines ahead of the old Brexit. We have a camper van, so room isn't an issue. What would Jean suggest we invest in and bring back a few cases of? Jared wants to know.
They're going to France and Germany.
They're just going to France. France and Germany, you're right, sorry.
Oh, well, it depends on the regions that you're going to. You're going to find that whatever regions you're going to, that's the main, you're only going to be able to really get wines from that region. If you're going over to Germany, I presume then you're going through Paris and then, you know, taking the motorway kind of west. So that'll probably bring you around Strasbourg area, so you will be passing through Alsace and definitely stop off there. The food is fabulous, the scenery, beautiful medieval towns, and try the Gewürztraminer, a Silvaner, or a Pinot Gris. And there's one red grape actually in the Alsace region, Pinot Noir, and Alsatian Pinot Noir is absolutely gorgeous. And Pinot Noir is a grape that's very much of the moment, so you could certainly try that. But if you go into Germany, Rheinhessen is the place to go. That's probably one of the premium German wine regions. And if you're looking for very, very good Riesling, that's where to go. And beautiful vineyards, and it's all very mountainous, and it's all very, very pretty. So it'll be a wonderful trip, actually. And a lot of places, cellar doors, just stop in and see. They'll sell you the wines at the door. So make it up as you go along and figure it out.
I wonder
how
they're coming back. If they come back through Britain.
Well, if they're in the camper van, that's really handy because at night
the camper van is rattling.
No, you can cook. You can stop. You can cook something to eat. And you can have a glass or two of wine, and you won't be bringing a hell of a lot back.
All right, okay. My 8-year-old wants to see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm not sure how kid-friendly it is. I know it's an animation, but is it directed for teens, or would it be okay? Maid wants to know.
It's fly is what I'd call it. It's fantastic. I loved it.
Trying to be all hip now.
All hip, inspired by the music there. I think an 8-year-old is fine. I think off the top of my head, the cert was 12A, which means if you're over 18 and an adult, you can approve. He'll see it. He'll be able to see it in DVD by now, but you can bring somebody under the age of 12. So it's kind of parental guidance there rather than, saying what you can and can't show your kids. But beyond that, I think it's a brilliant film to show an 8-year-old because it's not too earnest now. It's funny and clever and witty primarily, but it kind of puts forward the idea that anyone can be a superhero. So there's a female Spider-Man and there's a black Spider-Man and there's lots of different characters who kind of become rise to the occasion and say anyone can be a hero,
anyone can get bitten by
a radioactive spider, basically.
Is mead a form of wine? I have American relatives coming over. They keep talking about wanting to try it. No. I haven't an iota about it.
It's a honey-based fermented drink that goes back to medieval times. I don't know that much about it, but I know that it's based on honey and it is fermented. So because only wine is only the crushed is fermented grape juice, and mead wouldn't be fermented grape juice.
Okay. I'm throwing a baby shower for a friend on Saturday, and she asked that I keep the wine low alcohol. She's afraid it'll get messy fast, so we're trying to hedge our bets and keep things calm. What low alcohol wines would Jean recommend?
There's lots of low. The big trend at the moment is low and no alcohol wines, and there's tons of them in all the supermarkets at the moment. It really is a growing movement. And by low alcohol, I mean wines where they've deliberately left the ABV at about 5%. Some of them are fruit-based as well. They add fruit juices to them. Just go into your local supermarket or your local off-license. It's very much one of the big trends at the moment. There's plenty of it. I can't think of any brands off the top of my head, but I do know some like Brancott comes to mind. They've got a low alcohol wine. That's a New Zealand wine. There is like all over the world now, low alcohol is the big thing. So, and by low alcohol specifically, you mean 5% alcohol by volume.
Okay.
So you'll be able to get plenty of that. Yeah.
Okay. What's our second wine then?
Well, we're going to Bordeaux, to the region of Graves. And this is 2017 Chateau Riviere Lacoste. This is again in Lidl at $8.99. Now, Graves is one of the premium wine regions, one of the great first growth wines. Aubryon comes from the Graves region. It's an area that's best known for Sauternes, which is probably one of the world's most famous sweet wines. But the region also produces dry white and dry red wines. Now, both red and white wines in the Graves region of Bordeaux, which is to the south of the city, you're going south here. The red wines are made from a blend of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, and the white wines are made from a blend of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. Now, Sauvignon Blanc is native to the Loire, but it's actually a grape variety that's very prominent in Bordeaux as well. And increasingly, you find most Bordeaux whites are made predominantly from Sauvignon Blanc, except, it would seem, for this one. Now, I couldn't find the actual cépage or the blend on this, but when I tried this wine during the week, just before we came on the show, what struck me was that the Semillon is the grape that is actually dominating in this particular wine. Semillon is native to Bordeaux. It's the grape that is used to make the Sauternes because it's very susceptible to botrytis, which is the noble rot, which causes the grapes to shrivel and the sweetness to be retained in the sweet wines. But it also makes a very good dry white wine. The problem is that Semillon as a grape doesn't have a huge amount of acidity. It's quite a flabby white wine. It tends to give you kind of neutral, grapey, sort of melon, tropical flavors. But it's not a grape variety that really rocks your world. It never really has rocked mine. But if you add a little bit of Sauvignon into the Semillon Blanc, it's brilliant when it's a sweet wine, by the way. But as a dry white, I think it needs a bit of Sauvignon in there. What's happening here is the Semillon is dominating on this, but there's enough Sauvignon in there to make it interesting. So this is a very atypical Bordeaux white wine made from Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. Semillon as well, on the nose, it's like, you know, tasting note, wet gabardines in the school cloakroom of a November day. We've all done that. You get that aroma. But when you try it, there is a nice acidity coming through, but there's that kind of honeyed texture coming through, which is very typical of Semillon. I'm saying that now. I've just tried it, and I'm salivating because the acidity from the Sauvignon is actually really lifting the wine. But I still, just on the nose, I think there's more Semillon than Sauvignon in that. But at $8.99, that's a good.
So it can't be bad.
Chateau Riviere Lacoste, and I'd put that with... we're coming into green asparagus season. I love green asparagus. You get the real deal stuff coming in, you know, the sort of fresh stuff coming in. It'll be on our shelves within the next 4 or 5 weeks. Some chicken with some asparagus would be lovely with that.
Yeah, I made a terrible mistake there. We were supposed to do a movie there rather than the wine. So the audience don't have this wine in front of them. You could see for the listeners, you see the tongues hanging out now after that description. Swinging like a skipping rope, as Patrick Kavanagh famously said. Low alcohol, slightly sparkling wine, Bastille Miraflor, some Lidl, really lovely, 10.5%. Highly recommend. Would that qualify as a low alcohol?
Yeah,
10.5?
It's 8 to 10. Well, five. The specifically low alcohol is 5.5. And a lot of the wines that are being made at the moment are at that level. But 8 to 10, like most, a lot of the German Rieslings actually are naturally low. German wines will come in at about 8% ABV.
Okay, that's not bad. Right, we'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
And I makes you a man, full of imperfect thought, but at least you'll be real. Gone home.
Monster Cry there with their second song for us today. That's called Atlas. We'll come to you today from Tom's Table Restaurant at the Red Cow Mourne Hotel, with thanks to our friends in Lidl. And probably a lot of the audience are just looking at the two of them going, all guys in bands look the same. They all have beards. But the two of you are actually brothers.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Who was in the band first?
Unfortunately, I was in the band first.
And it was like pull, you got him in then.
Yeah, I hired him in then afterwards.
Yeah. Did you ever play in any other bands?
I've been playing in bands for my whole life, yeah. So this is the latest incarnation. I can't really get away from him, so.
Right. But he, just referring to him as he now, he was like a band virgin.
He was a band virgin, yes. Yes. Yeah.
What's it been like?
Has he been gentle? Yeah. He's been good, I have to say. Richie's been playing music his whole life, and when his last band kind of wrapped up, you said to me, would I help you out writing a couple of lyrics?
Yeah.
And I'd never really performed music before. We'd always played it in the house, you know, growing up. But it kind of snowballed. A friend of ours heard us one day, and he invited us to open for his band. And we played our first show, and then a festival booker saw us and booked us, and then it just kind of progressed from there, and
right.
we're still doing it.
Yeah, and so I suppose, then that sounds like you hadn't actually intended to...
No, it just kind of happened. It was just a very organic thing, so we were prepared for one show, and I don't know how many hundred shows later, we're still doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. And also, it's worth mentioning because, you know, they release songs and albums and the like, but they've also released Unearthed, which is a book of your lyrics.
Yeah, it's a new book that we've put together. It's a combination or a selection of some of our favourite lyrics from the last 5 or 6 years.
Do you write lyrics together, or is it...
We do, yeah. We write them together. Every song is kind of different the way it comes out. Sometimes I'll have an idea, I'll go to Richie, or he'll have an idea, or we'll sit down together. That's kind of what the book is about. It's... the idea that there's no one way to come across a song. So Unearthed is like you have to go out and be prepared to dig in the ground. And sometimes you just happen upon this song, you don't know where it came from. And then some days it's just like you're there with your shovel and you're getting nowhere and you're getting dirty. But it's kind of 50% mystical and magical and 50% hard work and graft.
Sounds like potato farming more to me.
Very similar.
Do you squabble about lyrics? Are there huffs?
There's no squabbling anymore. We've been doing it for too long. There's long drawn out silences.
Yes, we all know those in family. Listen, lads, thanks a million for
thanks
coming
for
along
us.
To us today.
Cry
Monster Cry there. Esther and Jean are still with us on the stage here. Please say hello to Maria Keeley, the Navin woman. She's in your audience. She hasn't drunk wine all week. In preparation for today, so be careful, says Sharky from Dundalk. So, Maria, are you still here? Good, she can wave her arms, so that's a good sign. Could you ask Jean where I could get a bottle of Cristal? My best friend is 50 this year. We thought it would make a fab present, Denise, in the audience wants to.
Yeah, I remember Searson's in Monkstown used to have it, and probably still do. Independent Mitchell's and Sons. I don't know what part of the country this person is in, but if you go to one of the independent
they're here tonight.
Yeah.
So,
they're so here. Okay, They don't. Cristal doesn't come cheap, though. I mean, it's a very, very expensive champagne. It's absolutely absolutely beautiful, and it's a white bottle, and it doesn't actually have a punt. The base of it is flat. I have once in my life, twice, drunk Cristal, and it really is a beautiful, beautiful champagne. It was originally made by a winery in the Black Sea, which I've actually visited, for Tsar Nicholas II, and it was originally, the winery was created in the 19th century. Abreu d'Urso is the name of the winery, and I visited there in 2014. That was to make sparkling wine. Sorry, I've got that completely mixed up. Do you know what? I'm tired. No, that's Russian wine. This is champagne. But yes, no, the House of Roederer originally made Cristal for Tsar Nicholas, but he also used to have his own winery in the Black Sea where he used to make
the
equivalent. Yeah, because he liked champagne a lot. Yeah.
Paul is in the audience. He says, so my name is Paul, and in the audience, I have nothing clever to say, but I think I should win the prize as it's my birthday tomorrow.
Yay!
Grand, you may say, except my 2-year-old has hijacked it for her birthday. Oh, where's Paul? Oh, toddlers, they're a pain in the arse, aren't they, really? It's all me, me, me. The prize is a 3-course table dose for 4 people here in Tom's Table at the Red Cow. It is yours! Not tomorrow, obviously, but at some point in the future. So, congratulations, Paul. Speaking of low-alcohol wines, any suggestion of that slightly sparkling Portuguese wine, Vino Verde, in Ireland?
Vino Verde, yeah. There's a lot of Vino Verde in Ireland. And it's got they deliberately leave a little bit of CO2 in it. The ABV is usually about 10. It's not, like, really, really low. But Vino Verde is made from Albarino and Lurira and various other grape varieties. And it's beautiful with fish, and it's a lovely sparkling wine and great to drink in the summer, yeah. But it is here. You will get it.
Non-alcoholic convincing wine is Light Live Sparkling Rosé. Been through a lot of them, says Lynn in Colester. Heard of that one.
I haven't heard that one, but yeah. And there's quite a few, the Torres Naturo, there's the Ariel, there's quite a few no-alcohol wine products on the market as well, yeah.
I've agreed to drive my daughters and their friends to Dublin tomorrow for some shopping, which means I've a few hours to kill. I was thinking of going to the cinema on my Todd. Can Esther recommend a movie to see? Dumbo and the likes aren't up my street. Anything with a bit of action to keep me awake for the drive home would be great. So that's Darren. He's listening to us in Galway and wondering how he was roped into the trip. Because you're a man, Darren, that's why.
Well, we 3 good releases this week, so I'd say go for any of those. Like, they're all thumbs up from me. Shazam, The Sisters Brothers, and the Troutman film, The Keeper. They're all really good dramas in very different ways.
Can your wine expert recommend a good sulfite-free red wine, either Pinot Noir, Chianti or Rioja, please?
Actually, luckily enough, what I discovered, Beaujolais last year, I visited Beaujolais last June, and quite a lot of the wines from Beaujolais are made with minimal, they use very little sulfur. And if you go to Green Man Wines in Terenure, they have some very, very good sulfur-free wines that come from the Beaujolais region that are really worth having a try. So, you know, that's where I'd recommend you go if you happen to be in Dublin and get to Green Man Wines in Terenure.
I've been looking forward to The Sisters Brothers since I heard John C. Reilly bought the rights to it a few years ago. Please tell me it's good. Is the bit with John C. Reilly's poor horse in it the only bit I'm not looking forward to seeing? That might be a spoiler, but we'll talk about the film now. First, here's a clip.
What's wrong with you?
You know what happened last night?
Yes?
And? You remember that you hit me?
I hit you? I hit you?
Stop pretending. And spare me the I don't remember routine. You hit me in public, Charlie. So as sure as you're looking at me right now, I'm leaving.
No, wait. All right, what do you want? This is about slapping each other in public. That's right, I slap you, you slap me back, raven. So go ahead, hit me.
What is your goddamn problem? I slapped you under whacking the head with a shovel.
See, you do remember.
Brothers, huh?
Yeah.
This is great. And Joaquin Phoenix deserved a slap by then because he's a very violent man. He is Eli's sister It takes a while to get used to the sisters, yes. Brothers. But they are Eli and Charlie's sister, and they are, you know, the text that joked that because this had a French director, they were all going to be sitting around smoking Galois and talking about the world. There is actually a little bit of that. it's quite a cerebral Western, and I think this is certainly what I loved about the film, and I think why people love the novel as well, because it has a really quite original central idea. It's 1850s, and there's a lot of violence unfolding in the film early on. And a couple of characters put forward this idea, you know, this lawlessness isn't working out so well for us. Why don't we all stop killing each other and start gearing ourselves towards building a civilized society? They're talking about this little townland by the name of Dallas and maybe forming a community there. it's really, really good in that regard. So, but at the heart of it all, you have these two very violent men who are notorious, really, and known for the acts of violence they've carried out. And it's, you know, they're within that relationship, they're very different characters. Joaquin Phoenix is an alcoholic. He's wild. He's a bit unhinged. They both have family background problems, of course. And John C. Reilly's more measured. He's the older sibling, of course, and he's more inclined to want to get out of it before he gets shot because they've had quite a few scrapes over recent times. And it feels like the heat is on them. It really does, because they're working for this Oregon mobster known as the Commodore. And they're kind of his Mr. Fix-Its. And they're kind of tasked with finding this man by the name of Herman Worm. They all have weird names in this. And he's kind of ran out on a debt, but he's also heading west to try. He's come up with this formula to help find gold, basically, and he thinks he can get rich. And it basically involves using a chemical. He's a chemist, a pharmacist by trade, so it involves using this chemical formula to illuminate the gold, which looks amazing in one big scene in the film, actually, very cinematic. And he is kind of he's randomly made the company of another man who's played by Jake Gyllenhaal. And he doesn't realise that Gyllenhaal's plan is to double-cross him and to get him to a pickup point where the sister's brothers can take him and pay a bounty. So they're all kind of hoodwinking each other. Mm. And Riz Ahmed, by the way, plays the pharmacist. He's absolutely fantastic, as he is in everything he does lately. So it is a very strong four-character piece. And it kind of keeps you guessing right to the very end. And there is, you kind of remind yourself about halfway through that it's another Western. There's an air of familiarity about it, but it's so strongly written and so brilliantly acted. Like, this cast show up, you know, and they're all great, that you kind of think you're watching something completely new. And I think this filmmaker who, you know, Jack Odiar, who I'm a great fan of, and if you haven't seen A Prophet, guys, do yourself a favour, it'll be streaming by now. It's a few years old. It's this tale of how a young and vulnerable prisoner works his way right up to the ranks. It's almost like a French Godfather. Like, it really is that powerful, you know. And ditto Rustin Bone. He's a really, I was excited when I heard he was coming to the States and making the film, and I think he's absolutely delivered. There is a scene involving John C. Reilly in a horse, which is really sad and heartbreaking, but also kind of reminds you that these characters are they're very violent men, but they're kind of human beings as well.
Right.
And it kind of touches back to that all the time and nudges back to that all the time.
A few people are texting about, has Joaquin Phoenix been not making movies for the last few years? He doesn't seem to have been in anything.
He hasn't, no. And I suppose what you're seeing here is maybe he's been banking them all because he's the Joker as well, you know, so maybe he's been busy off filming, you know, preparing himself for greatness. That Joker trailer is amazing, and I just think he's brilliant. I love everything he does, and he's great here again. Like, just, this is really good, and it'll come and go, you know. It's kind of a more art house leanings, I think. So
okay, it's not a Western.
You owe it to yourself to see it on a big screen, though, is all I would say, you know.
Is there a Peppa Pig movie?
Yes, there already has been. There might have been a couple.
Well, somebody says, has your movie expert been to Peppa Pig? I'm going with my son at 5 o'clock, so recommendations for wine are being listened to avidly.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen it, but I would definitely be bringing wine to that one. Yeah.
Oh, God. God, love them. From Leslie, who's in the audience, wants to know, is it true that wines from a lime-rich soil from regions like the Pyrenees should only be drunk with food? The locals call their wines hard and are bemused by tourists sitting drinking their wines without food after dinner.
Well, in France, they call wine the second sauce because very much the ethos is that, you know, they wouldn't sit really and drink wine on its own, in theory. They really believe in matching it with food. I think it's the Northern European countries that tend to have the preference to sit and drink it without food, because that's our culture, you know. Yeah. So, but that is changing now. That's changing a lot. We often in the trade, there's a great saying we always say, "That's a great wine with food." That's shorthand for horrible wine, you know. Yeah. If you put food with it, it'll taste much better. I never said that, by the way. Yeah. But you know, yeah, not specifically is the answer to that. And in a roundabout way, I'm a bit tired. I didn't sleep very well last night, and the brain isn't working.
It's working fine.
Which is obvious.
Paul texts in to say, "What a lovely day it is. Just finished a hearty walk in the Phoenix Park. Going into the visitor centre now for a light cappuccino and a muesli, yogurt and berry bowl." Hmm. Somebody's been going for a large number two sometime in the near future. But thanks for sharing that with us, Paul. We really wanted to know that. Are there any cocktails you can make with red wine? You often see champagne cocktails in fancy pants bars, but never a red wine cocktail.
I'm sure there are, but I can't think of any.
I don't think there are.
You know, mulled wine comes to mind. Sangria, which we mentioned earlier. We've often had people talking about that they put Coca-Cola in wine in Spain, and
we know
that. Yes, I am sure you could put make red wine cocktails, but I haven't.
But why would you?
Because red wine's just much nicer drunk on its own.
You might want to think about this one, Esther. Maeve says the husband's on a stag tonight, so I'm planning on getting a takeaway in, buying one of those wines you're talking about, and turning on a trashy movie. Can Esther suggest the trashiest of movies? I need a good one to go along with the dirty Chinese I'm planning. I'm so excited I could squeak, says Maeve.
Oh, I'm going to have a think.
Yeah, do have a think.
Yeah. Define trashy. Does it have to be so bad it's good? Yeah. Or is it just bad?
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of, okay, we're all so speaking on behalf of you, Maeve, but that's probably what she means. Yeah. Okay. Well, have a think about that. We'll take a break, back in a couple of minutes. Five 3106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming to you today from Tom's Table Restaurant at the Red Cow Moran Hotel, with thanks to our friends in Lidl. Esther and Jean are still with us. My 7-year-old has been bugging me to watch The Witches on Netflix. I remember it scaring the bejesus out of me when I was 10. She insists it won't bother her and is really annoying me about it. Should I just cave in? That's a parenting question, I would have thought. Really,
yeah.
Rather than that.
Watch The Search closely. I think with horror in particular, you have to be careful. I think parents are often more worried about sex scenes and stuff, but some things can really sit in the minds of kids, you know. I think generally, if a kid's... did she say 10?
She said it scared her when she was 10, but her child is 7.
No. I wouldn't do it with horror.
That.
No.
Yeah. I finally watched Black 47. Now it's on Netflix. Such a good movie. That mad lad, James Frenchville, says very little, but he's so dark and disturbed. He says a lot with his eyes. Great acting out of him. My only complaint would be Hugo Weaving and all his mumbling. So hard to understand. I did a lot of rewinding because of him. Was I alone in that, or did others have problems understanding him?
I had no difficulty with Hugo. No, I have no difficulty with Hugo Weaving in anything, to be honest. I think he's great. I love the way Black 47's reached an audience so wide, and it did so well here commercially as well. I was worried about whether a subtitled famine drama was going to kind of pack the box office here, but I was happily proven very wrong. It was the biggest grossing Irish film here last year.
That's great. Any nice reds that are low in carbs?
Oh, I give up.
I think you have your answer there. Any update on when Hellboy is out? I'm a fan of David Harbour from Stranger Things. Looking forward to it.
I loved the first two films. They always felt like comic book films for people who don't read comic books. Hellboy, that's what I liked about them. It's out next Thursday, so we'll be reviewing it on the show next week. I haven't seen it yet. I thought of a trashy movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
We were having a debate here during the ad break about whether life's just too short to watch bad films, full stop. So I've kind of come up with a good trashy movie, which was, we had a lot of fun reviewing it last year, Rampage. where the rock and a giant gorilla try to save the world.
Yes, I remember
and
that.
And it's actually quite fun.
Yeah.
So I'm going for that.
Well, a few suggestions from listeners. Great movie for, is Sisters, Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. Great, really trashy and kind of sweet. Any of the Pitch Perfect movies are trashy as hell. Anything with Amy Schumer in it. Trainwreck, I Look Pretty, can't go wrong.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, to be honest. But yeah, I just think Melissa McCarthy's good, full stop. I mean, that's good trashy, so... I think she's looking for something that'll wash over you, I think.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Rampage, Bridesmaids, any of the kind of mainstream female comedies that came out in the recent years. Little Miss Sunshine is always a joy, but I won't put the word trashy anywhere near that.
No,
it's
that's
just
not
perfect.
Trashy.
Yeah.
Should I get my 7-year-old to watch Dumbo the cartoon, which she has never seen before I bring her to Dumbo the live action movie? So what they're asking is, should they watch the cartoon with the acid trip and the racist overtones before they bring her to a really sweet film?
That lovely cuddly movie with racist crows where the elephant gets drunk and starts tripping on pink elephants. It's much beloved. I watched it very recently again, and there are some absolute beautiful scenes between mother and baby. I don't think you'd need to see it to see the new film. As I said last week, the new film feels very much like a companion to that film rather than a straight-up remake. Like, they've brought in loads of new human characters and stuff like that and rebuilt a whole story. In fact, the kind of end point of the original Dumbo is almost the starting point of the new film, so that's how much they've brought it on. You wouldn't need to have seen it.
Right, let's move on to our third movie of the day. It is The Keeper. Here's a clip.
This lad could save us from relegation.
This is not about football, Dad. He's a German. You can't just ignore that.
To me and everyone around here, you're still the enemy. You, play football, keep your gob shut.
What's up with Bert's neck?
It's a war wound. Poor lad can hardly speak.
And also, I have a light cold.
He's German. You're not, are you?
Yes, I am.
Yes, I am.
So this is kind of like if Billy Elliot was a footballer from Dresden, it would be this movie. So it's quite, it nearly alienated me in the first 40 minutes because it was very pointed and it was like, you know, the girl looks at him and then looks away about 10 minutes into the film. You go, okay, we know you're going to end up together, but can you please not make it so obvious? You know, it was very arch and it was very one-dimensional. And I was kind of going, God, this is going to be a bit odd. You know the way those British comedies sometimes can be? They can be almost too simplistic. But thankfully, story takes over and this becomes something really kind of nuanced and interesting, but still highly entertaining, just, you know, straightforward English drama. But because the story is so mad, it almost kind of takes over the direction of the film and kind of gathers its own life, really, I suppose. And it's about this man, as I mentioned at the start of the show, Bart Trautmann, who fought for Germany in the war on the front lines, got well decorated for it. So, you know, he wasn't kind of crying in his tent or anything. He was out there doing all the dirty stuff and ends up getting captured. He tried to desert, actually, but this was kind of 1944. It wouldn't have been that unusual for people to be trying to get out of Dodge at that stage. And he was captured by American forces on the French border and handed over to English and brought to the north of England, where he was kind of sentenced to hard labor while they kind of investigated all these men and the extent of their war crimes or not. So during that time, the lads are just bored. Like, they're all young fellas in their, you know, late teens, early 20s in a camp. And so they start playing football. And, you know, there's a guy from the local town's club spots this brilliant goalie out in the yard and says, "We are getting relegated unless we win tomorrow. Is there any chance we could take him for the day, you know?" And he, you know, Trautmann's very kind of doubtful. He's played by a German actor, David Cross, who's very good, actually, very charismatic actor. And he's very doubtful about all this to start and kind of realises, well, like, it's spend the afternoon here doing hard labour or go and play football in a stadium. It's kind of a no-brainer, you know? And off he goes. And it's just a mad story because he's like, it's like 2-3 years after the war, after World War. And, then, you know, the Germans are absolutely hated in Britain and with much good reason. But kind of gradually... And he doesn't try to endear himself, he's just kind of himself. And there's a boyishness about him, I suppose, there's a vulnerability about him. And he just endears himself to this kind of community. And, you know, if you get your town off the relegation zone. It kind of doesn't matter where you're from as well, you know.
It's interesting, though, especially at the times that are in it now, to remind ourselves, in the relatively recent past, Germans particularly were hated in Britain.
Why union was regarded as a good idea, you know. And it's nicely nuanced. As I say, the first 40 minutes I was going, I'm not going to stay with this, but it becomes nicely complicated in very interesting ways, because he ends up being bought by Manchester City, and he went full Schmeichel. He ended up playing with them for years and years and being an absolutely adored goalies often play for years for a club anyway, but I was kind of astonished, I suppose. My point is that I'd never heard this story before, but there were protests, like 20,000 people took to the streets of Manchester when they joined them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't straightforward for him, but he never went back to Germany. He found love in England and raised a family there, and there's actually a very personal tragedy in that as well, which I won't go into. I don't want to be giving away everything on the story, but there's a notorious case, though, you know, and he's never painted as a hero or a patriot. It's not anything as simple as that. It feels like, you know, the way we were talking about the Nureyev film a few weeks ago, and that he wasn't political, all he wanted to do was dance. And it feels like all Troutman wanted to do was save goals, you know. And there's a case in the 1956 FA Cup final where he actually broke his neck. He got kicked in the head when he was on the ground stopping a ball. And he broke his neck and he kept playing. He finished the match, as he did in the 50s.
Men
were
men
to be
back
men
then,
those
really.
Days, yeah. So it's not a great film, but by any stretch, there are problems with the storytelling in it. But at some point, this incredible story kicks in, and I've only told you the half of it, actually.
Okay.
And it does very much carry the film through. It's well worth seeing.
Another trashy movie suggestion, Working Girl with Melanie Griffith, with the bonus of 80s fashion.
I love
now,
Working
that
Girl.
Would be trashy, yes. On the question of whether to let a 7-year-old watch Witches, definitely too scary for a 7-year-old. My two kids found it disturbing at 9 and 11. Though somebody else has said, I let my 7.5-year-old watch Witches at the weekend. Does that make me a bad mother? It was kind of, they didn't laugh that heartily there. I think it was a kind of a split decision. And before we go to the break, a text actually in for you, Esther, from Aoife and Nisha. Does that, those two names ring a bell?
Yes, they're my nieces.
They're your nieces, yeah. And they said, could you wish Movie Chick a happy birthday for next Thursday?
Sweetheart.
Is that what they call you, Movie Chick? They don't know your actual name. Movie Chick's here again. Hi, Movie Chick. Right, we do have to take a break.
It'll be great. I'm really looking forward to celebrating my 27th.
With them, yes.
With them, yeah.
It must be weird having nieces who are older than you.
It's weird aging in reverse, John.
Yeah, it must be strange, yeah. Right, we'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes. Five 3 106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. We're coming to you today from Tom's Table Restaurant at the Red Cow Moran Hotel. Our hashtag today on Twitter is embarrassing movies. As ever, it's the top trend in Ireland, Stool of Rock being one example. A question for you, Jean. Can you get wine infused with beer or whiskey? I'm wondering if the two worlds ever really meet.
The nearest thing you'll get is wine that's actually aged in barrels that have been used at some point to age whiskey. And that's a trend, actually, at the moment. And I was in China and in Ningxia visiting the wine region, and there was a big presentation on. And the next thing, up steps the guy from Teeling Whiskies. And I was really, I'm sitting in the middle of Ningxia, which is, you know, on the edge of the Gobi Desert. And there's Teeling Whiskies. Talking about the new partnership they have with one of the Chinese wineries, where they're going to be aging the Ningxia wines in barrels that had formerly been used to age Teeling whiskey, which is a brilliant piece of marketing. So, and that's very much a trend that's happening not only in China but in other parts of the world as well. Barrels are very, very expensive, and they're always reused. And sherry barrels and whiskey barrels are always used, and now this is one of the trends
and
that's emerging.
And these are for beers as well. And
I haven't heard of beer barrels being used to.
Oh no, they've used whiskey barrels. They put beer in whiskey barrels. Good trashy movie. Some Like It Hot. Best last line of a movie of all
time. My favourite film of all time.
It's a great movie.
I
don't call it trashy though. Spice Girls, the movie, as trashy gets.
Yes, but yeah. Actually, that's a good trashy film. Yeah. It's quite funny, Spice Girls movie.
Muriel's Wedding has everything. You'll laugh, you'll cry, dance along to a stonking ABBA track.
Again, that's just good.
Yeah, I know it's just good, but it's kind of good, yeah, quality trashy.
Yeah. Best use of ABBA maybe ever.
Yeah. I'm heading to Porto, renting a car, heading to the Douro Valley. What would be the best vineyard to visit, Andrew?
Listen, there's some fabulous ones. I was lucky enough a couple of years ago to stay in a place called Quinta do Crasto, which is up near Pinhão. And, the Douro is absolutely the most beautiful. If you get a chance, try and do one of the trains. Get a train from A to B, because just going up along the train track.
Now you're telling us he hires a car.
I know. But the train is actually really, really lovely thing to do. Vallado is another winery that, because a lot of the up the Douro, a lot of them are port houses, you know, but increasingly more and more of them are making still wine, and Crasto and Vallado are the ones that come to mind because I've been there, but you know, there's a whole route and there's a whole tourism place to that will tell you where you can go, and the wineries that are open to visitors, and some of them even have accommodation there as well, so you can stay there as well, and they've restaurants, and a lot of them do weddings as well, so it's big business. Ooh, wine tourism. Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
My husband, a similar question. My husband is letting me choose the summer holiday this year. I'm thinking an Australian vineyard, but no idea where to start. Can Jean direct me in the right way, says Grania. She's very excited, but the hubby is really regretting his decision.
It depends on where you're going. One of the most famous, the Hunter Valley, of course, is very, very famous, north of Sydney, and places like, you know, Tyrrell's, Bruce Tyrrell, which is an Irish connection, obviously. There's McGuigan are there as well. I know the McGuigan, McWilliam, Scott McWilliam, I know very well. I'm mixing McGuigan. They're in Hunter Valley. That's Semillon country, by the way. So if you want one of the great classic wine styles of the world, which is Hunter Valley Semillon, then it's worth having a look. Look, there's a lot of wine tourism. If you're in Adelaide, go up to the Barossa Valley. Lots of places, fabulous places, and the Clare Valley as well. South Australia, down your places like Coonawarra and Pathway, you know, out western Perth down to Margaret River, which is just south of Perth. Yeah, it depends on where you're going in Australia, but there's a lot of places to visit
But Australia being so huge, big, you'd fly to one place and do the vineyards there.
Yeah, yeah. It depends on where you're actually going.
You could do all of them. Where can I buy, in Ireland, where can I buy J. Lore Seven Oaks? L-O-H-R. I used to get it in Canada. I can't find it anywhere
that is
in Ireland.
That is a premium California wine. Their Zinfandel is absolutely wonderful. They also have Cabernet Sauvignon. I have a feeling that you're going to find that on the restaurant lists and in, you know, some of the sort of the very posh place, Ashford Castle or Adair Manor. It's kind of going to turn up Carton House. It's going to turn up in places like that. It's probably not. You might get it in one or two independent off licenses, but it's more going to be on the wine lists of the really fine dining establishments, because it is actually premium wine and it doesn't come cheap.
Okay,
but it's a super wine.
Well done. Bit of class there. Right, so let's move on to our third wine of the day, our first red wine.
We're going to the Rhone Valley. And anyone who loves Châteauneuf du Pape is going to love this wine. This is the 2017 Cru de la Vallée du Rhône Gigondas. It's the Lidl Gigondas that's exclusive to them. It's Jean Desvignes is the producer. This is $16.99, which is a very good price for Gigondas. Gigondas was once part of Châteauneuf du Pape, and in 1971 it got its own appellation. And there were two sub-regions of Châteauneuf du Pape, Vaccarat and Gigondas, and I think Vaccarat got their AOP in 75 or 76. This is very similar in style to Châteauneuf du Pape. It's made from a blend of grapes. This particular wine has 60% Grenache, 10% Mourvèdre, and 30% Syrah in it. Most wines from the Southern Rhone, the Côte du Rhône or Côte du Rhône Village or any of the appellations in the Southern Rhone are blended wines. And Grenache or Garnacha, as it's known in Spain because it's a Spanish grape, is the backbone of Mediterranean winemaking, both in France and Spain. The other interesting thing, Mourvèdre is another Spanish grape. In Spain, it's known as Monastrell. So what you have is Grenache, which gives you kind of this light summer fruit kind of, it's more red fruit than black fruit coming through. But what I particularly like about this this wine, you've got that lovely long flavour of blackberry, but there's a lovely kind of hint of chocolate and spice coming through. This absolutely super wine. At $16.99, this is just lovely. It's warm, it's spicy, it's very, very drinkable. And again, it's part of the Lidl French wine sale at the moment.
Yeah, it's very nice indeed. Joe, who's a brewer based in Kildare, says, I've used Sauvignon Blanc and Chardonnay barrels to age my beer in the past. I've done lighter coloured ales as opposed to dark ale and stouts aged in whiskies.
Very good. Yeah.
So
yeah,
that
yeah.
does happen. Another suggestion for a trashy film, True Romance.
Oh, God. I remember...
Getting groans from the audience. That's not going to work.
I remember going to that in the cinema when I was much younger, thinking it was what it was called, which was True Romance, and I was going to get a nice cuddly rom-com. Yeah. It's pretty violent, that film. It's pretty out there.
I wouldn't be at home watching that by yourself. No. Is it weird that I like my red wine slightly chilled?
No.
No, that's quite normal in many parts of the world.
Beaujolais would be a white wine, a red wine that would be, like, you would serve slightly chilled. Saint-Nicolas de Bourgogne or Chinon, which is Cabernet Franc from the Loire Valley in Paris, that would always be served slightly chilled. In Ireland, we don't really get our head around that, you know, chilling red wine, but yes, it is something you can definitely do.
Is there any news about that? There's a new Pet Sematary film.
Yes.
Apparently, so with John Lithgow in it.
It's out today, yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen it, I'm afraid.
Right,
okay.
There's
a heap of films out today.
Okay, but did they do previews? And if they don't, that's normally not
no,
a good sign.
No, to be fair, they did show it.
They did show it.
I failed spectacularly, yes.
It might be that. Right, we do have to give away an overnight stay here at the Red Cow, along with dinner at Tom's Table, also here at the Red Cow. So we're going to give that away to the poor listener who's at 5 o'clock is going to see the Peppa Pig film. I think you need as much joy in your life as you could possibly get at this stage. Anyway, it's time for some good things to do this weekend. Here's Claire.
Hello, I'm all the way over here.
Yeah.
So we're about to hear from him again in a few minutes, but Carvin Jones, the trio will be performing at Arthur's Pub in Dublin tonight at 9:30, so if you do want to hear more of Carvin, do head along to that. I have more here. Where's it gone? The Harvest continues its nationwide tour and is on stage in the Visual Carlow on Saturday night. So go to visualcarlow.ie/events for details on that. And one just important one to mention. Now, it's not happening till June, but you need to get your skates on. So on June 2nd, 2019, to mark the third anniversary of his near-fatal brain injury, the Red Cow Moran Hotel CEO Tom Moran will abseil the 9-storey extension of the Red Cow Moran Hotel, which I'm sure you saw on your way in, and you'll definitely see it from the roadside as you're driving by. Tom's goal is to help the hospital that helped him. His aim is to raise €200,000 to build a dedicated brain disease resource and research centre at St. James's Hospital. So you can join in and you can abseil along with them. You need to sign up by going to the redcowmoranhotel.com/jump for James. That's /jump, the number 4, and then the word James. And you can do it individually, as a team. You'll get all the information there to help a good cause.
Okay, that's good stuff. Thanks very much for all that, Claire. We're pretty much at the end of our time here at the Red Cow, so a few people to thank. We obviously want to thank Tracy and Tom Moran and all at the Red Cow Moran Hotel. Lidl for all the lovely wine that we drank today. Cry Monster, a cry. And Carvin Jones, who you'll be hearing from in just a few minutes. Hopefully his strap is fixed and is... We've had loads of mishaps and dropping things. Were you at his guitar, Gene?
Me, it was me.
Yeah.
Hands up.
Yeah. Paul Buckland and Andy Knightley on sound. Shefer O'Donovan, Leisha McKenna, Jade Wilson, Claire Collins, Niamh Fassel, and Michael Quilligan back at bass. And Jesus, of course. We'd like to thank you, the audience, for coming along to us here today. And Carvin, as we said, is playing tonight in Dublin. And he's going to sing us out with What a Good Day. Now, Ivan's up next on News Talk. Have a lovely weekend.
Woo! All right. Double, I thank you so much. Thank you for having me. All right. Can y'all clap y'all hands out there? Come on, give me something. Oh, yeah. Hey, well, I'm a man. All right, baby. Here we go. All right. What a good day to be alone. What a good day to write this song, baby. I need my baby in these tough times. I need my guitar and a sane mind. Here we go. I want the church to cleanse my soul. My spirit is healed, so I've been told. I can't be stopped, just you watch me. Victory's mine, just you wait and see. Victory's mine, just you wait and see. Yes, it is. Night at Arthur's Jazz House. Thank you so much, baby. Thank you so much. Thank you.